During these weeks following Easter, we hear these rich and admittedly strange stories of how the risen Christ appeared after the resurrection. So for 3 weeks, the attention of my sermons has been on an interesting detail that several of these post-resurrection appearances of the risen Christ are set at meals. These transformative encounters happen in the setting of some kind of meal. If you were here, you may recall the first one was the story of the disciples on the road to Emmaus, where the yet unrecognized Christ joined them and then stayed with them for a meal. And it was when Jesus broke the bread that their eyes were opened and they recognized this to be Jesus. And then suddenly he disappeared. That story set on the very evening of Easter, Resurrection Day. I said, if the Last Supper is what we call that meal on Holy Thursday, the night before Jesus' crucifixion, the meal at Emmaus was the First Supper. The Last Supper on Thursday, the First Supper on that Easter evening of the resurrection. And last week, we looked at what I have decided to call the Next Supper, because it was the scene immediately following the scene at Emmaus. Those two disciples had returned to be with the other disciples in Jerusalem, and the risen Christ appears to that gathering only later that same evening. And that's the story where Jesus, the risen Christ, asks for a bite of food. Now, surely it was a story that was told to verify somehow that the resurrection body was physical and real. But I believe that request to be fed, as it happens when all of us share food with another one, it's a request, an invitation into a relationship and intimacy. First Supper, the Next Supper, and today we have the first breakfast. The first breakfast. So if you are very familiar with these gospel stories, you might recall, or even if you're not familiar with the stories, you might be able to deduce that our reading today begins midway through a story that is already in progress. So to bring you up to speed, I thought I would share a little video synopsis of what happened beforehand. Some of you may have seen it, but I thought it was worth seeing again.
After I got it wet. Okay, guys, I had to send you a message and let you know what's up. You should have come over last night when I asked you, because it has happened again. Jesus has shown up again. Actually, he's right over there. He's making breakfast. So here's what happened. Last night we were hanging out at my place, and we were talking about everything that had happened these last days. The horrible, horrible, awful things, the amazing things that have happened. Spent hours talking about how did it happen? What did it mean? What are we supposed to do now? Gosh, everything's just turned upside down. Well, after hours of that, I was just fed up, and I said, I need to go fishing. Just clears my head. So seven of us took the boat out, and we fished all night long. Didn't catch a damn thing, not even a minnow, all night. Well, it was dawn, and we were ready to pack it in, and we spotted someone on the beach who was waving towards us, and he called out and asked, did you catch any fish? We said, nothing, squat, all night. And then he said, well, if you throw your net over the right side of the boat, you'll catch some. Yeah, you know, we're thinking, yeah, right, sure, whatever. But we gave it a try. We threw our nets in, and just as we started to pull them in, they were so full and heavy fish, we couldn't even get the net in the boat. It was right then when John turned to us and said, it's the Lord. And in that moment, we knew, I knew, impulsive me, jumped out of the boat and swam to the beach because I just needed to see for myself. Well, we pulled the nets in to the beach, and we're sitting here waiting to have breakfast. You know, after that awful, awful night, when I lied And I said, I didn't even know who he was. What kind of rock did I turn out to be? And then, when he was killed, I never thought I was ever going to be able to make it right, that I'd never be able to try again or start over or say I'm sorry. But you know, now that he is back, it doesn't just feel like he has a new life. It feels like I might get a new life too, that I might have an opportunity to start over. Breakfast is ready. You better hurry up and get over here, because who knows how long he's going to stick around this time.
I'd like to thank the Academy for the opportunity. Now, I think I'll keep my day job. Just to let you know, during our Elevation series that's ongoing right now on these post-resurrection appearances, we've been creating these postable things that if the good news, if these post-resurrection appearances were to be happening today, how would that good news get shared? So I invite you to visit our Elevation page. You can see this video and a couple of others over the last couple weeks. So the story begins with a handful of disciples gathered near the beach or at the beach. We really have no idea what they might be discussing or talking about. That isn't told in the story. We can only speculate that they would have been endlessly trying to figure out what had been going on over the last several days. And Peter, in a kind of matter-of-fact way, or a changing-the-subject kind of way, says, I'm going fishing. And six others join him and say, we'll come along. Now, you might recall that Peter and James's brother John, in the story here, they're referred to as the sons of Zebedee, were fishermen. They were fishing when Jesus first called them. So they were going back and doing what it is they knew how to do. After all that had happened, they returned to the familiar work, what they knew best, fishing. But this time, it just wasn't working. Now, they had probably had poor catches many times in the past, but working all night long and not coming up with anything over and over again. How frustrating. How frustrating. Then there is this strange figure that appears on the beach and tells them, throw your nets on the right side of the boat, and they suddenly got a catch of fish too heavy that they could barely get it in the boat. And their eyes are suddenly opened that this stranger is in fact, the risen Christ. And Peter jumps into the water, impulsive to the end, and swims as they haul the catch ashore, only to be surprised that on the beach, the risen Christ has already kindled a fire, is already grilling fish and warming bread, ready to share breakfast on the beach with them. Now, it is something that may have happened for them countless times, but this time, when everything was different, it must have been brimming with meaning. When I visualize that scene and meditate on it, I find that scene deeply touching and moving. I can't recall any other time in our gospel stories where it is said that Jesus prepared the meal for others. It's possible, but no record of that in our gospels. He was always at a meal or another somewhere. But here the disciples come ashore, breakfast already there. Now we might imagine that poof, somehow it magically appeared, but I think rather that this risen Christ took time to make breakfast, and that's what touches me most. This, whom Christians say, Jesus Christ, was the embodiment of the eternal God, the God of the vast an endless universe, who taught and healed and walked on water, raised the dead, and was himself dead and raised from the dead. This one, crouching on the beach, hovering over a kindling fire, grilling a few fish, warming some bread for the people that he knew and loved, waving them over, saying, "Come and have breakfast." That is a scene of such tenderness and warmth and care that it moves me to imagine. It's at that breakfast, which turns out to be the final scene in the entire gospel according to John, that we hear this unusual, this intimate conversation between Simon Peter and the risen Christ. Now, this conversation, like a lot of things, is only recounted by John, but there is a much more well-known scene that we encounter in all four of the Gospels in the Bible that shed a particular light on this conversation. Peter here affirms his love three times. That's the same Peter that only days beforehand, the night before the crucifixion, three times utterly denied even knowing Jesus. That is a symmetry and a counterbalance that cannot be a coincidence. There is no record anywhere of a conversation Peter might have had with the other disciples about what happened that night, or if anywhere else Peter had the opportunity to make an apology or attempted some kind of reconciliation. I'm beginning to think that might be why Peter is always running ahead of everyone else at these post-resurrection appearances, maybe trying to get in early at a chance to talk to Jesus. But upon the death of Jesus, Peter was left with the knowledge that his final act as a disciple was a lie, where he denied even knowing who Jesus was. Imagine the weight of that guilt and the despair. History calls Judas the betrayer, labels Thomas the doubter. Peter was the denier. If anybody needed a second chance, if anyone needed a chance to start over, it was Peter. This intimate conversation on the beach, there may have been three very painful no's at that nighttime scene, but now there are three yeses. Where there had stood three denials because of his fear, now there are three affirmations of his love. Peter gets to start over. Have you ever longed for a second chance? Anyone here ever wanted to be able to start over? And it seems pretty rare that we get those chances, doesn't it? There's something that we may have said or done, knowingly or unknowingly, that causes pain or harm to another, that may have betrayed them, betrayed our own values. Yet time and events just keep on rolling forward, and we get left carrying this sad burden of, if only I could do that again. If only I could make that somehow right. We wish we could turn back the clock and undo what was done, but we cannot. We feel bound by our regrets of the past. The future feels small and bleak because it's constrained by our mistakes. That poem by Rabbi Shapiro expresses it, I think, beautifully. We long for a true morning, a really new day, a new beginning, and we feel stuck in the middle. And then he adds, we long not just to find a new beginning, but he uses the words, for a beginning to seek us out. For a beginning to seek us out. You know, it is not Peter, but Jesus who starts this conversation. Maybe Peter didn't even know where to start. Maybe he didn't know what his heart most needed. He may not have had the words to start over. It is the resurrected one who offers Peter a new life and a new start. You know, and that's good news we still need to know, that we aren't defined by what came before. We are redefined by the choice that we make now. We don't live in the past. It happened, yes. That would be another kind of denial to say, oh no, that didn't happen. It happened. It impacts us, it shapes us, but we don't live there. We live in the present, and we get to choose in the present. Just when Peter, or we, may think that we are buried in the tomb of what we did in the past, we are offered a new life and a new start. A real morning dawns. Interesting to notice that with each of those affirmations of Peter, a verbal affirmation, there is an action that is requested. The question, do you love me? The answer, yes. Then do this. Yes, then feed. Yes, then tend. Yes, then follow. This start over is not just apology. It feels a bit like making an amends. Those of you who are familiar with 12-step programs will recognize that as the ninth step, and some might even suggest one of the hardest steps of the 12, where you actually take a direct action to somehow address a harm that you had caused another due to your addiction. You actually make a concrete action, an amends. But if this is like making an amends, notice it's making an amends with a twist. Someone got that already. While the risen Christ invites and asks, do you love me? The actions are directed towards another. Feed them. Tend them. Do you love me? Then take care of them. The final words of Jesus recorded in this Gospel of John are these words that are spoken to Peter. The risen Christ finds the disciples fishing in the very same waters, on the same beach. The final words to Peter are the same as the first words Jesus spoke to Peter and the others, follow me. The last words, the same as the first, follow me. Now, at the beginning of things, surely he and they didn't know exactly what was going to happen with that first yes to following. Did they know the signs they would see? Did they know the triumphs? Did they know the agonies and the horrific things that would come by saying yes to follow me? This time, a few years later, they're a little bit older, maybe a little bit wiser, probably wiser from their failures. Peter has a chance to start over because he gets asked the same question. He gets to say yes to following all over again. The good news of the resurrection is that it was not just Jesus who experienced new life, but in this case, it was Simon Peter who was given a new life because he was given a chance to start anew. And it's not just Peter, it is we too who are given a chance to start anew. We are not stuck with the middles. A new beginning seeks us out. It seems fitting to me that this new beginning is at breakfast on the beach, because there is a popular and probably overused saying that says breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Is that just as true for our spirits as it is for our bodies? is the first thing that happens on the new day as important for our spirits as our bodies? It is the first breakfast of a new morning each and every time we have the opportunity to start anew. It's a fresh start. It's the first meal of the rest of a new life.